For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two of the most intelligent cave dwellers you're ever going to meet, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, the term identity politics is out there on a regular basis. With the upcoming campaigns and things going on, we have to look at the classification, the labeling of people and of groups and of individuals. And my question to you, let's start it off this way. Is there a Catholic identity?
Well, there's certainly things that define you as Catholic. So I think if we start there, there's definite things that you can look at and say, well, this person exhibits this characteristic, this characteristic, this characteristic, therefore they're Catholic.
That's certainly one way to look at it. Yeah. So that's, I'm glad we're going to spend a little time today in the cave talking about identity, as it relates to, say, identity politics and other things. One of the things, so that would be a thing. So we often, I think you're right, Mark, we often begin our conception of identity or one's identity or another person's identity with some of these outward signs or signals, attributes, characteristics that we see. But I don't think identity is really limited to that or grounded in that, that there might be something deeper, more existential or metaphysical as it pertains to identity.
Right. You know, as we go deeper and deeper into what constitutes identity, that's when a lot of the philosophical conflicts that are there kind of underneath the surface of a lot of the political discussions we have, a lot of the theological discussions we have, a lot of the differences that we have in how we view the world, how we view ourselves, etc. They all kind of come from that question of how really do you identify a person's identity? What goes into making a person that particular individual? Where does an individual come from? What makes an individual? And ultimately, what is essential to you as you?
Yes. I think I might begin with, if we start kind of at the surface and then maybe we can work our way sort of deeper through the question. I think one of the things that comes to my mind is, again, kind of in a secular sort of way, we think about identity can begin with things like customs and traditions. So, for example, here in on Catholic Radio Indy, we're in the heart of Indiana. So this is Colts country. So if you like football, then you know that the Indianapolis Colts are our home team, professional NFL team. And so one way that people identify themselves are being Colts fan, and they express that by wearing a variety of shirts, right, that show jerseys, hats, Colts paraphernalia that sort of identify themselves with that particular group. And so you can, on game day, you go downtown, you go to Lucas Oil Stadium, and you will see lots and lots of people wearing blue and white colors, all in support of the home team. So that's a very, again, kind of superficial way that people is through, say, wardrobe selection, is a way that people express outwardly a kind of affinity or begin to identify with a kind of group.
Right. You know, and that identity with a group, especially based on sort of those superficial things like how you dress, the sports teams you root for, all of that goes back to the question of what kind of stories do you engage in? What kind of stories and what kind of background do you give yourself to identify who you are? And so that's a very postmodern conception to a certain extent of where identity comes from. So postmodernism is one source of this, of an answer to the question that we started with. How do you define yourself? Well, a postmodernist in the postmodern world says you identify yourself based upon the stories of where you came from. So, you know, part of that story and part of that lore of Indiana is this great football team, the Indianapolis Colts, that are led originally by Peyton Manning and then by Andrew Luck, and all that goes into being a Colts fan. You know, that's part of the story of growing up in Indiana. And because of that, that becomes part of who you are. And so that postmodern approach, obviously, we're talking about sports and you know, the clothes you decide to wear. So that's a very superficial side. But that postmodernism can get a lot deeper than that. You know, the question of the shared history, shared collegiality with others that share that same story of origin of where you came from. That's part of what goes into identity. And I think as Catholics, you know, sometimes we kind of do see that to a certain extent of a mark of our identity as Catholics. We're Catholics because we come from the same traditions, the same rituals, the same sets of things that our grandparents grew up with, our parents grew up with, now we're growing up with it. Those are the types of things that lead to a Catholic identity. Once again, a very postmodern approach. Postmodernism, there's a lot to criticize there, but there's some truth to it too.
Yeah, I think when I'm, again, kind of sitting at the surface level, when I think of like a Catholic identity, expressions of it, do point to things like, could be things like outward expressions of one's Catholic identity, for example, wearing a St. Benedict cross or miraculous medal. Whenever you see a medal of Our Lady, pretty much know they're Catholic.
Yeah. So
there's certain dead giveaway. Now, if you see a cross, you know they're some flavor of Christian. You just got to figure out which flavor they are. But I would also say there's part of what really shapes us, I think, as you were talking about, is I think the liturgical calendar. So as we move through the various liturgical seasons of the year, we engage in very specific customs and traditions and rituals. The church itself, you know, offers to us different liturgies, the colors of vestments, etc. The interior of the churches change depending on the liturgical season. So there's plenty of these exterior expressions of what I would say a more interior reality.
Yeah, exactly. Those exterior manifestations, they're somewhat easy to dismiss, but I think people dismiss them too quickly. So people look at those, though, you know, as you said, the interior of the church or the, you know, in some ways the rituals that go along with a particular season of the year, you know, giving up meat. You know, a lot of people will give up meat not just on Fridays of Lent, but they'll give up meat as part of their sacrifice. The church calls us to sacrifice on Fridays. That's an important reminder.
Yes.
The church calls us to sacrifice on Fridays, and yeah, the traditional way that we've done that has been by giving up meat. But
yeah, because Christ died on the cross on Friday.
Right.
So that's why meat would be an appropriate thing to forego on Fridays.
Well, and more to our point, it's part of the tradition of Catholicism that we give up meat on Fridays. So it may seem superficial to say, well, that's just traditional, but those traditions then go and sculpt and kind of help to form out our identity as being part of the church, part of the larger group that has these practices. And so they may seem superficial, but they go deeper than that because they really are part of what helps to form us as Catholics. They help to form that identity as part of the larger group.
Yeah, it's a distinctive feature of living out one's Catholic faith that, again, if there's a common practice like Catholics generally not eating meat on Fridays, well, that becomes known not just to Catholics, but to those who are not Catholic. And then that can create opportunities that differentiation can create opportunities to be inquisitive or be open to questions about, like, hey, Mark, how come, you know, we're all at a function together, say, through your employer, and they're serving lunch, and lunch is a bunch of deli sandwiches, and you're looking around going, and I notice that you're pulling the meat off yours, you know, you're just going to eat the bread and some vegetables. I'm like, why is that, Mark? And you, that, right? The minute I ask you, that's your opportunity as a Catholic to begin to share a little bit about, well, here's how it's an element of me living out my deepest commitments of my faith.
Right. And, you know, these differences, they can a lot of times appeal like layers of an onion, where, you know, you start to peel them back and okay, so the outer layer is very easy to take off. It's mm-hmm. it's very, very superficial. But underneath that is another layer that honestly that was adhering to a little bit. And underneath that's another layer that was adhering to it even more. Mm-hmm. And so all of them are kind of built up on top of each other to where you really can't take one away from the other without diminishing the size of the onion, without diminishing
right.
the identity that you have as a Catholic. So some of it may seem very, very superficial, but as you start to peel it away, you really are kind of diminishing the identity, the total identity as a Catholic.
Right. The and so that begins to lead us towards things, that question of, you know, what does it mean essentially to be a Catholic? You know, what's sort of the grounding in that? Because there are all these external signs when we talked about some of them. The other thing is I always carry around my rosary, and I have a big one too. I love this company. Here's a free plug for them. They're called Rugged Rosary, and you can find them online. And what I love about them is my problem in the past with carrying rosaries around is most rosaries are fairly delicate, and so it's not long before I would find that the chain would break and that kind of stuff. Well, Rugged Rosaries, what I love about them is that they use like 400-pound test paracord and these like super beefy beads, and they seem like pretty close to indestructible. So I've really enjoyed having that. But they're big and thick and bulky, and so when I pull it out to pray the rosary, which I do daily, you know, you can see it. You know what I mean? You can see it. So it does create that kind of a visual sign to others that has at times been an occasion for people to ask, well, what is that?
Right. And not only that, but it's got the attributes, a lot of the exterior attributes of a weapon. So it's made of a lot of the similar materials. You know, they're military grade rosaries
right.
to a certain
right,
extent.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got that outward reminder that no, the rosary, even though it's an instrument of prayer, it really is a weapon, a spiritual weapon that we use as Catholics.
And we need to take a break. We'll be back with more talking about Catholic identity here in the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Our annual dinner is early this year. In fact, it's just around the corner on Tuesday, August 27th. It'll be at the Northside Events and Social Club, formerly the Northside Knights of Columbus Hall near 71st and Keystone. It'll begin with a reception and silent auction at 6 p.m., then dinner at 7. There'll be a live auction with some really special items, plus you'll be able to meet the Catholic Radio staff. Father Douglas Hunter, pastor of St. Rock Parish, and chaplain for the Indianapolis Colts will be the speaker. It'll be a fun evening, and it will raise some funds that are critical to keeping Catholic Radio on the air here in this area. Tickets are $65 per person, or you can round up some friends and save some money with a table for eight for just $450. Tickets are available right now online at CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling us at 317-870-8400. And special thanks to Franciscan Health for their help in underwriting the cost for this year's event.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kemp Lanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. We're talking about Catholic identity. And one of the things that I have noticed for years is the fact that, it used to be when I was a kid, and I'm showing my age now, you could go out in public and you could tell who the Catholics were. There were outward signs that were there. For example, you went out to dinner, sat down at the table, and you could look, and if you saw a family sit down, perform the sign of the cross, and bow their heads, you knew, okay, we've got a Catholic family here. You mm-hmm. don't see that anymore. We're trying to blend in some ways. You know, when was the last time you were at a public meeting and by chance, maybe they offered a prayer? Did you do the sign of the cross at the end of the prayer? If so, how many people looked at you and gave you that weird look like, oh, mm-hmm. he's one of those? Mm-hmm. But how many Catholics don't do these outward signs anymore because they're just trying to blend in?
Yeah, they're trying to blend in, and I think a lot of people have decided that these are superficial gestures, you know, that the sign of the cross after a prayer, it doesn't make the prayer any more or less sincere. So why do it? Why bring attention to yourself by doing something that's merely superficial? But as we were talking about in the last segment, those superficial signs are connected to a larger story. They're connected to a larger picture. And so as you start to take off the superficial ones, you begin to diminish the overall picture of who you are as a Catholic.
Yeah, it's that distinctiveness. Hey, I know myself, I tried to be very intentional or deliberate about making the sign of the cross in when there is an opportunity, say in a more public setting for prayer, that's being offered, whether it's a meeting or something like that, going out to a restaurant and making the sign of a cross and then saying, you know, prayer, thanksgiving for the food. But it is very rare. And I do feel, I'm a lifelong Catholic, and I still feel that little bit of a interior, like, I feel like I'm going to draw attention to myself or we're going to draw attention to ourselves. And that's really not the purpose of doing it. It's more, the purpose is really to invoke, making the sign of the cross is to invoke the Blessed Trinity and give God the honor and the glory.
Yeah, it's a sign of blessing, ultimately. Right. You know, right. You're giving yourself a blessing before you're blessing the food. Right. And so, but it also, as you're kind of bringing out, you do feel that little bit of, well, I'm putting myself out there. I'm putting myself out there in an environment that is, in America, unfortunately, traditionally hostile to Catholicism to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's...
And getting more hostile.
And getting more hostile. But it actually, I mean, there was a time where it was very hostile. And so that's part of the shared identity that we have as Catholics that comes from that shared history. And a lot of identity, when you start to look beyond, I guess, what forms the identity of just a Catholic, but what forms identity of different groups, it's that shared narrative history. Once again, that's kind of a postmodern view of identity, that it comes from these stories, it comes from the past, it comes from the history that we share together. And a group that shares those same combined stories, that's what makes your identity. And you know, when you look and turn to politics, I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the identity politics coming from. People trying to go back and recapture those shared stories and shared narratives, sometimes into going to ridiculous lengths to try to link yourself to a group by saying you've experienced the same things, or you've shared the same things, or you've got the same experiences coming from the past that give you identity with that particular group, when it may or may not be true in today's setting, but it's that shared history of an often history of an oppression that gives you identity to a particular group.
Yeah, I'm wondering too if one of the problems we face in the current setting isn't that we don't have a very good or solid or cohesive narrative. And therefore, our identities are fractured, and they're fractured and fragmented in a way in which the way we then come to a self-realization of our identity is through, as you mentioned, identity politics, which I would define as this sort of you're gearing your political messaging and policies and ideology and agenda that appeals to one particular feature of a human person. So our identity is fragmented. I'm broken up into one part is based on my gender. Another part of my identity is how I understand my race. Another is my ethnicity. Another is my religious identity or lack thereof, and on and on and on. And this and all these are little fragments. And then the fragments, though, cause a kind of conflict, too, because you can now fit into a variety of different categories that can actually be working at cross purposes.
Right. And that's one of the, you know, that I think that's one of the big criticisms of that postmodern view that, you know, we are pretty much made up of the stories of where we come from. Well, those stories can morph and those stories can change and those stories can often conflict.
Right.
And so, you know, in a lot of ways, your identity then can shift.
Yeah.
And you can,
or your story could be untrue.
Or your story could be untrue. Exactly. And so your identity then becomes something that's really in a lot of ways built on sand. You know, it can be uprooted, it can be pulled away, it can be lost, and most importantly for the political scene, it can be challenged. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, feel the threat of, you know, identity politics to a certain extent is there's a constant challenging of the stories of where you came from. Was your group really oppressed? Or was your group the aggressor? You know, especially when you get into identity politics in Europe. And you have this ongoing battle between different groups like the Serbs and the Croats, for instance, of who was really the aggressor, who was really the victim. And you kind of have a back and forth going on of you know, victimizing one another that really honestly can go on for centuries, and unless something really comes across that disrupts it, I mean, it could go on eternally.
Yeah, it goes back and forth. It's hard. It's very, very hard to sort out. And I think in the American setting, it's particularly difficult too, because we're a pluralistic society. So we have a vast array of different diverse groups, both diverse in an exterior sort of sense, but also interior, right around people's kind of thoughts and values and worldviews and as well. That makes it very difficult, I think, to achieve a kind of cohesive narrative about us being one people, for example.
Right. And I think at the center of American politics is the question of, are we one people? Do we have one shared past, one shared story of America, or are we different peoples with different stories, with different narratives, some of them that have been, you know, groups that have been oppressed by the mainstream group, you know, others are part of that mainstream group. You know, which is it? Are we one country and one nation and one story, or are we lots of different subgroups with lots of different stories?
You know, for the longest time, we referred to America as a melting pot. And in a melting pot, everything goes together and everything ends up tasting the same. I'm coming to believe more and more that we're not a melting pot. We're a salad bowl.
yeah, I've heard.
Or a stew.
Or a pizza. You know, I've heard.
A pizza.
A pizza used as, you know, pizza pie is the American, you know, the metaphor for what America is. But I think that central question is behind a lot of the identity politics that are going on. And I think it affects the question of who are we as Catholics? You know, are we just one other group among many other groups that come together? Or are we fulfilling in a lot of ways, our more spiritual role as a priestly people that are constantly calling everybody else to find an identity, not in your past story or your group's past story or, you know, the story of your people in the old world, but are you finding your identity in Christ? And so how we as a priestly people of Christ identify ourselves as Catholics, as opposed to Roman Catholics or Italian Catholics or an ethnic group or a subgroup of Christians or another denomination. You know, I think that really plays a lot of the question of who we are as Catholics.
Yeah, I think it brings up an interesting point around, is my Catholic identity, is the culmination of my Catholic identity represented in its entirety by the customs and traditions that I practice or fail to practice? Or is there a deeper reality that grounds my identity as a Catholic, from which flows things like exterior expressions of being Catholic? And that I think is kind of at the heart of the matter, because I think part of one of the things that may be happening now, you have so many Catholics stop practicing the faith, that in the United States, right, the second largest quote-unquote denomination is what? fallen away Catholics.
Right. And a lot of fallen away Catholics. And you know, there's a continuum there. I don't think you're either a solid church going, go to church every Sunday, you know, mass going Catholic, or you're completely fallen away. There's a continuum of lots of people in between the two.
Right.
I guess your identity as a Catholic, everybody within that continuum identifies themselves as Catholic. You know, so if you went around and did a poll of, do you consider yourself Catholic or not, you're going to find a lot of people that are, some people would consider fallen away Catholics, saying, yes, I'm Catholic. And then others that, you know, maybe they're not as fallen away as they think they are, but for whatever reason, they've stopped identifying themselves as Catholic.
Right. Well, I think what I would point out is in those situations, maybe one of the misunderstandings is, as it pertains to, say, Catholic identity, Catholicism, is I'm not what makes me Catholic isn't how I consider, whether I consider myself to be Catholic or not. That's not what defines it. What defines me as Catholic is being baptized a Catholic. And then I stop being Catholic, not because I just disavow myself from or stop practicing my faith to some degree or another, or even completely. I have to do a formal renunciation according to canon law to stop being Catholic. So a lot of people who are saying, well, I'm not really Catholic. Well, yeah, technically you are. You know, if you were baptized, unless you have gone to the bishop and officially, I think you have to put it in writing and officially renounce your Catholic faith. You don't drop out of the Catholic Church like you do a country club. I just don't belong there anymore. I just don't belong to that club anymore. I stopped going, so therefore I'm not affiliated with it. Well, baptism has a deeper kind of reality that is the grounding of Catholic identity.
And we are talking about identity here on the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In studio with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. We'll be back with more on Catholic Identity on the Catholic Cave right after this.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, with access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming, podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
This year's Catholic Radio Indy Annual Dinner is actually a celebration of our 15th birthday. It's going to be on Tuesday, August 27th at the North Side Events and Social Club. We'll have a great silent auction, a really fun live auction, some great food, and Father Douglas Hunter is our guest speaker. Attending our dinner is a great way to support this station while you have some fun and meet the Catholic Radio staff. Tickets are available online now at CatholicRadioIndy.org or at 317-870-8400.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. We're talking Catholic identity. And you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, if you went into a big city and you were new to the town, you picked the church you went to based on your ethnicity. There was the Irish church. There was the Italian church. There was the Slovenian church. I mean, right here in Indianapolis, if you go down to the old Holy Trinity Church down in Hallville, over the mantle, it reads, Holy Trinity Slovenian Catholic Church. It was a Roman Catholic church, but they had their identity right there, Slovenian Catholic Church. Each parish had its own ethnicity. And over the years that we've actually gone into the melting pot as far as Catholics go, and we no longer have those divisions. In a parish, you might have, you know, 20 different nationalities represented in a parish these days. Has that affected Catholic identity? Is that, you know, a blessing, or are we losing some of our traditional identity?
That's a great point. I think it, at least in the American setting, you point out rightly that we've had a custom, a history of, as immigrants from different countries, Catholics tended to what kind of flock together and build
out.
We're
a little cliquish.
Where you can be, yes, absolutely. Well, people, we like to gravitate towards people who are like ourselves. That's kind of a natural part of human behavior and affinity. And so as immigrants came from Ireland, they tend to settle in the same kind of cities, same part of the cities, that kind of stuff. And the Germans, the Italians, et cetera, all the way down the line. And so coming from the quote-unquote old country, Ireland, to this day, Ireland has its own way, its own particular national expressions of Catholicism. And if you grew up in Bavaria today, you would see it's a very Catholic part of Germany, but they have their own kind of, they also, in addition to the universal themes and theology and understanding, things like that, that they're common where to wherever you find the Catholic Church, there are also local ways in which those have found meaning and expression. One quick way to kind of think about that is think about like canonized saints. You find that the Irish, of course, are very devoted to Saint Patrick as one, and Saint Patrick is a distinctly Irish historical figure.
Though he was English,
that's true. But he saw the wisdom of serving Ireland.
Right, and you know, I think that brings up a very important point about ethnicity. Is, you know, this is almost a different way of defining yourself from the postmodern approach.
Yes.
Where the postmodern approach would say, well, you know, those Germans are German because they have a common heritage, they have a common story, they have a common history, they have a common set of practices that they all adopt that makes them German. The fact of the matter is, no, what makes them German is their DNA. You know, there's a physical manifestation of where you come from, which would lead you to say, well, St. Patrick was not Irish. St. Patrick was English, or St. Patrick, more to the point, was actually Roman. You know, the yeah, so he was Italian. But you know, this ethnic view, I think, of identity points to a little bit older understanding of identity that comes really out of modernism. And so, you know, the modern period was the great period of nationalism to a good extent. And part of the reason why was because of the philosophical background, that what made you a person and what identified you as a specific person was a whole set of attributes that connected to you from the ground up, from biology on up. So your initial identity as an individual was then colored by the family that you came from, which was then colored by the community that you came from, which was then colored by the nation that you came from. And so your identity, to a great extent, was wrapped up in, really honestly, not the stories or heritage or practices that you engaged in, but the DNA that you inherited from immediately your parents, but more, you know, indirectly from the region or country or nation that you came from.
Yeah, that's interesting, that kind of layering. Who would you say, Mark, is the thinker sort of responsible for kind of putting that together?
Well, I don't know that he put it together, but Hegel was definitely probably the main exponent.
You said the name.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the unholy trinity.
And for Hegel, you know, all of reality is this kind of layering, going from being on up. And, you know, it's a process of putting more and more attributes on top of things. And if you really want to understand something, you have to peel away those attributes sort of one by one by one by one. So if you really want to understand who Tim is, you have to start to peel away the little bits of, okay, well, he's an American. Okay, well, underneath that American, well, he's an Irish American. Okay, well, underneath that Irish American, he's an O'Donnell. Well, underneath being an O'Donnell, you know, he's from his particular family. And from that particular family, then we finally get to who Tim really is.
Mm. Yeah, that's a fascinating way of looking at it, too. Kind of goes back to like your kind of that onion, you know, peeling back the different layers of the onion, right?
Right, but it's peeling back different layers of the onion based upon observations and based upon things that are more tangible than just stories and traditions and activities and behaviors. Because as we were saying with one of the big criticisms of postmodernism, those are all malleable. Those all change over time. You know, your makeup as a human being, as a particular manifestation of a human being at a particular place in a particular time, that doesn't change. That stays the same. And so you can understand something by looking at those facts rather than looking at sort of the behavioral facts.
What role, Mark, do you think spiritual realities play in constituting and forming our identities? Got him!
No.
There's smoke coming out of his ears because the fire is burning.
Yeah,
he's thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it because we were just talking about Hegel, and now you're asking for my own views on the matter. So there's a little clutch in
when you change gears.
Exactly. So let's go back to answering how Hegel would say.
Okay,
that,
sure.
That all of this is a manifestation of spirit. So all of this that God put into an individual is God's expression of who that person is. So we are no separate than our bodies. Mm-hmm. You know, we are one unit of body and spirit, very much so from the ground up. Mm-hmm. So you cannot separate your soul from the fact that you're an Irishman, Tim.
Okay, good.
And who would want to?
Exactly.
You have the soul of an Irishman from the ground up. And certain parts of our spiritual identity do come from our families. They do come from who we are from the individual side up. Yeah, you know, I think there's some psychology and some research to back this up. If you're a middle child, for instance, as I am, there are certain attributes that go along with being a middle child, just from the very nature of where you are within that birth order. Being an oldest child, you know, it breaks it up. And that goes on. Being an American in the 20th century, there are certain attributes and certain things that are that all of us have in common because we're simply from the same time in the same place. And they go beyond just those stories and narratives and customs and things that we all carry. They're part of our DNA, so to speak. But that part of our DNA is an expression of our spirit. And likewise, our spirit is very much influenced by all of these physical things that go. You can't separate them. You can't take out the spiritual element from the physical element and look at them differently. Mm-hmm. It's all one and the same. That would be Hegel's answer to your question. My answer to the question's a little different than that, in that your spirit does change you, and your spirit does change over time. And so your spirit is more than just where you came from. I'm beginning to sound like Mufasa from The Lion King here, but but I think
which is back in theaters.
But I think The Lion King is an interesting case study in identity there. I mean, the whole story revolves around the identity of Simba. Is he by nature a king? Was he born to be a king? Is he a king because of whose son he is and the place he came from, the Pride Lands? Or is he something else? Is his identity something that's malleable, that he can change, that he can run away from and re-identify himself as a worm-eating, grub-eating animal along with Pumbaa and Timba, and along with Timon and Pumbaa and all the rest of the other animals?
I'm not as familiar with it as you are.
But no, I think it's a great...
You're lost.
Yeah. I mean, that sounded like you were listing off like a whole assortment of candy bars.
Yeah. But the whole movie does revolve around that question of, is our identity something that's wrapped up in our heritage and our genetics and sort of the family and ultimately country and nation and place that we came from? Or is our identity something that we can redefine for ourselves?
What role do you think fate plays, you know, this idea of destiny?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, that's a great question in our identity. I mean, there's so much to us as a person that we don't really have any control over. You know, I had no control over the fact that I was born here in America, to my family, in this time, in this place. That's totally, completely out of my control. And not only that, but there's a lot of the people that I encounter in my life that are completely out of my control. So all of those elements that are out of your control, I guess you could call those fate or destiny. Other people call them random chance.
And some people call them their kids.
Right. But does fate or destiny determine your identity? That would be another question.
Well, and that's a question we're going to take up right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest? Or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
This year's Catholic Radio Indy annual dinner is actually a celebration of our 15th birthday. It's going to be on Tuesday, August 27th at the North Side of Ensign Social Club. We'll have a great silent auction, a really fun live auction, some great food, and Father Douglas Hunter is our guest speaker. Attending our dinner is a great way to support this station while you have some fun and meet the Catholic Radio staff. Tickets are available online now at CatholicRadioIndy.org or at 317-870-8400.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, here with Kent Blanford, and we are talking about identity today and what constitutes identity and what the definition of identity is. And so far in our show, Tim, we've touched on two different definitions of identity. And I think, you know, underneath a lot of the sort of political clashes and political manifestations of these identity crises that we're facing are these two different definitions. But there's more than two of them. And so we're going to have to move on to, I think, a more classical definition of identity. But the two that we've touched on, we've talked about the postmodern view of identity, and that is you are identified by the stories of who you are. So the different stories, the different practices, the different, I guess, communities that you adhere to are all defined by this sort of shared narrative. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the postmodern view of identity. We are the stories we tell about ourselves. The other identity, though, is a more modern view of identity, and that is your identity is this layer of who you are almost biologically and to a certain extent spiritually, based upon where you came from, very physically where you came from. So you are a ultimately a collection of an individual, a member of a family, a member of a community, a member of a nation, and a member of a race. And all of that plays into who you are as a person. It's like a big onion where you're layered down. And so the question and the big criticism with that is, how far down does that onion go? You know, where is our common humanity and how obscured is it? In other words, can I, as a German, really relate to you as an Irishman? Or is our identity so different that we're ultimately going to always be separated by who we are ethnically and who we are nationally?
Like a divide that we can't overcome or cross or traverse.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, our identity goes all the way down to the core of who we are, and it goes all the way out to, honestly, that very, very superficial level of our shared humanity. But I think from that modern view, that shared humanity is on the outside of the onion. which that's really what differentiates itself, at least in my mind, from the more classical and scholastic view of identity, where that shared humanity is at the center of who we are as a human being.
Yeah, I would say that, and that falls along the lines of natural law theory, right? That, and I was going to say the two things maybe for us to consider, especially as Catholics and Catholic identity. One would be this idea that human beings have a human nature, and that our human nature is what we hold in common, and that is the grounding by which we can we establish things like rights and obligations. It's a grounding for our intrinsic worth and dignity, and therefore requiring us to respect each other, especially respecting the lives of each other. But then it also includes, and as Catholics, most fundamentally, I would say, is the recognition, and everyone listening has heard this before, that we're made in the image and likeness of God, and it's through baptism that we're adopted into God's family, into the mystical church, as his sons and daughters. That to me, that's the prevailing reality of what it means to have Catholic identity.
Right. You know, our identity is found in our nature as a spiritual animal. So we are a rational, spiritual composite of body and soul. And ultimately, we've fallen away from that identity through sin. And so we find our identity again in Christ, commonly, altogether, by finding our identity back in really the representation of humanity in Christ. So Christ is the new Adam. And we find our identity as individuals in our identification with Christ as the new Adam.
Yeah, that's very much... in keeping with Pope St. John Paul the Great's encyclical, one of his early encyclicals called the Redeemer of Man, and that is the whole point of that encyclical, is the Holy Father of blessed memory serves to remind us that our true identity lies in Christ, because he is the full embodiment of what it means to be fully human.
Right. But that does lead to the question. So if we find that full embodiment of what it means to be human, wouldn't we all be exactly alike? You know, as we become more and more Christ-like, are we becoming more and more identical? Am I becoming more and more like Tim?
Well, that's a great question, because you'd think that, right? That somehow imitation leads to a kind of consistency and almost like a replication, identical type of replication. But I would say we that doesn't happen. And the evidence for that is when I think about, well, who are the closest friends and companions of our blessed Lord? Well, it's the canonized saints. And by reading the lives of the saints, what do we notice? They don't all become identical. No, quite the opposite. They live out their lives of virtue and holiness in very distinct manners. So, you know, St. Teresa of Calcutta life in imitation of our Lord was very different from, say, a St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's where, you know, comparing and contrasting this conception of identity, comparing that with the modernist idea of identity that we were just talking about, you know, this idea that you're this composite that goes from you as a member of your particular family on out. You know, as a Christian, and finding your identity in Christ as a rational animal, and then living that out in a particular place, in a particular time, in a particular way, with particular customs, with particular habits. Our identity then moves, not, you know, our identity is not defined as an onion where we're peeling away the layers of it, but it's an identity that kind of grows like a seed from the seed on up to a full blossoming big tree.
Yeah, you know, the acorn to the oak.
Exactly. That you can see that identity all the way out, but the way it manifests itself and the way it plays itself out at different places, at different times, in different ways, is going to be different.
Yeah. And just in the same way that, you know, you could, in a forest, you see all these different variety of trees having, you know, kind of a common nature, what it means to be a tree. Trees have essential features or qualities to them. They have trunks, they have bark, they have root systems, branches, leaves, that kind of stuff. Yet each one also has its particular way of being in the world,
right?
That's beautiful and unique and special. Same with human beings.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at a botanist that takes care of flowers, you know, what differentiates one flower from another flower, you know, even of the same species of plant, is what goes into the soil. It's what nutrients are given to that plant. You know, how much water, you know, the heat, all the environmental circumstances,
sunshine,
you know, it doesn't make the flower a different type of flower. It doesn't change the identity of that flower, but it changes the outward appearance and outward manifestation of that flower,
whether it brings about flourishing or not. And I can tell you, someone who has personally killed just about every plant I've ever owned, I'm really, really bad at it, indoors and out.
Yeah,
they don't stand a chance when they get to my house.
Yeah, I was
gonna
say,
because I don't water them enough, or
you
I water
Brady
them too much.
Brady Bunch lawn.
What's that?
AstroTurf.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like it's my lawn is actually a combination of kind of like dry dirt patches where the grass is completely dead and vanished, and weeds.
Yeah, mine's kind of a an experiment in biodiversity of how many right. how many different varieties of different plants can I get growing in my lawn.
Right. Oh, man. So getting back to Catholic identity, because we're almost out of time in our show today. I do want to revisit a little bit for our listeners. So we've been talking about Catholic identity. Different ways in which identity manifests itself. So I think what you were talking about, Mark, was so important is that understanding that we're rational animals. That's kind of Aristotle's term, but that we're body and soul, right? We're not one or the other, and then we're not separate. The human person is a body and soul. So we have both a material and spiritual or non-material realities, right? And every human being is infused with a soul that has a God gives us a soul with a destiny in mind, which is to what? Be with him in heaven for all eternity.
Right. And God helps and nourishes us through the different circumstances in our life, through the different, you know, the combination of people that are put in our lives, places that we live, the different set of circumstances that we encounter. Those are all put there to help us grow and manifest ourselves. And honestly, to appear and give that manifestation to Christ in different ways for different times and different places.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll share just a couple of practical suggestions about how one, if someone's listening, like, well, how do I strengthen my Catholic identity? I would say there's maybe three quick things that I would recommend. One would be, it's always studying the faith. So getting involved in any sort of scripture study or faith formation program available at the parish, maybe in your deanery, maybe something online. Listen to Catholic radio. There's tons of great programming on Catholic radio, and that's free, although we do appreciate your financial support and prayers. Second would be really embrace the liturgical seasons. Find out what wonderful Catholic customs are out there. So really immersing ourselves in the different seasons. So our next major season coming up will be the Catholic New Year will begin, liturgical New Year will begin with Advent. That's sort of the next big thing to look forward to. And then I would say third, something I know you're a big promoter of, both you, Mark and Ken, is really community, right? Finding other Catholic, like-minded Catholics that have that are headed in the same general direction that you'd like to go, to share common create and share common experiences, and support and pray for each other. Those would just be three quick things I would suggest.
And that is about all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week. One of the things I would suggest, make sure that your identity is getting all the nutrition it needs to become truly identified as Catholic. And to do that, celebrate the sacraments, get to Mass this weekend, celebrate the Eucharist, Until next week, I'm Kent Blanford for Mark Tuttle, for Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. This is the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy. God bless and be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.